Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about the Coen Brothers' 1998 film, The Big Lebowski. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Rockin' steady.
Good, good. Joining us today is a very special guest. He is the director of the 2009 film Mystery Team, the MTV original film Worst Prom Ever, the music video for Childish Gambino's Freaks and Geeks, as well as countless videos for the group Derek Comedy. Dan Ekman, thanks so much for joining us on the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Bebop. See, now that was a Ninja Turtles reference to his Rocksteady.
There you go.
Sure,
okay.
Was.
I'm glad that you explained that because I honestly didn't get that straight.
Tonka and Razor, get the fuck out of here.
It was a bit of a stretch and also was kind of a soft bit.
And it's funny, Ectoplasm, because I got it right away, which is weird, I think.
For those of you listening, he's calling me Ectoplasm. That's apparently my new nickname. He called me that and Dr. Venkman earlier. Which I like. I like both of them. I don't get any Ghostbusters names. Analogies. I guess.
That's funny, Dan, because actually I think the first time I met you guys, I did an interview with Derek during a double feature of your movie Mystery Team with Ghostbusters.
Which was an amazing honor, by the way.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It all comes together.
All right, so if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I believe it's your turn for the character name game this week.
Oh, yeah. Sure is. Let me get my blue card out.
Ready? Is that how you do it? Do you have, like, flash cards or something?
Yeah, I have, like, game show cards that I just keep. They're, like, just a box of them, like, Trivial Pursuit style, and just pull a random one.
Excellent. All right, what do you got for us this week?
This week's character name game is Ricardo Bodie.
Ricardo Bodie. All right, so Dan and I will have to guess what movie that character is from at the very end of the episode.
Would you like the spelling of the last name?
Yes.
Sure.
So that I can Google it during our show. I'm kidding.
B-O-D-I.
Ooh, okay. Not the Point Break.
Beta, spelling, beta Omega Delta I. I don't know the I one.
Yeah. You're not versed in the, what is that called? The Greek alphabet? The phonetic? No.
It's like jet pilot speak.
Okay.
No, that's not jet pilot speaks like Alpha, Bravo, Charlie.
Yeah, no. I think that's what you're going for.
You kept with...
Yeah, I was going Greek all the way.
I'm not sure what, I think it's the Greek alphabet.
All right, this is a disaster. Let's go
I'm
ahead
going
and move
Pantheon,
on.
Brother.
Let's move into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've gone to or concerts or anything like that. Tyler, we generally start with you, so let's keep that going. What have you been consuming this week?
Well, I went back and watched... Me and you had a conversation this week, Ben, via Twitter, is it? I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about Big Bag Beetleborgs. I don't know if anyone of our listeners remember this show, but it was basically a cop-out of the Power Rangers. We made some jokes. People laughed. And then I realized that all of these shows, Power Rangers, Beetleborgs... VR Troopers is all on Instant Watch, so I've started watching Power Rangers again from episode one.
Okay, you're talking about the original like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, right?
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm talking Trini and Kimberly and
okay,
Bazinga.
The like old racist one, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. The Black Ranger is black.
The Yellow Ranger's Asian.
Right.
That one. Okay, good.
Ectoplasm, can you guess how many episodes are in season one?
Well, I know that it was like, wasn't there like some sort of Asian television series that they like took all the robot fighting from and then they just like shot like American actors to like give it a story? That's, as I understand it,
that's exactly what happened. Yeah, and as a kid, I did not know that. I just thought...
Although, looking back, that was the only way that ever was happening.
60 episodes in season one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Season one of how many?
What's that?
One of how many episodes? Or how many seasons did they do?
I think there's three seasons under just Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Wow.
before they switched to what, Zeo or something like that?
I think it was Mighty Morphin Alien Rangers and then Zeo Rangers. Because they were children for a while and then they grew up again.
Okay. All right. So
but I started watching it, I was expecting the spell to be broken, you know, childhood versus adulthood. Incorrect. This is still the shit. So if you watch these shows and enjoyed them as 8-9-year-olds like I did, go back, check it out. It's better the second time.
You're insane. I mean, I haven't watched it, but I can't even imagine that being true.
Yeah, I don't frankly believe you, but
Goldar is a badass motherfucker. It will wreck your shit. But joking aside, the other movie I watched this weekend was Jean-Claude Van Damme's 1990 film Lionheart. Have any of you guys seen this? Have you heard of this?
I have not seen it, no.
Have you heard of it?
I mean, is that one where he plays like one of the members of the French Legion?
Yes, that's okay, exactly. Then he escapes the French Legion, or the Foreign French Legion, whatever it's called over there, and escapes to America and becomes like a street fighter and is paid for street fighting skills. And
as often happens in a Van Damme film.
Right. And spoiler alert, his brother dies, which is why he's fighting in the first place, which again is another theme.
Yeah.
I think he had a hand in the script and in the writing, so he was really fond of this story of street fighting with vengeance attached to it.
Yep.
But having said that, one of the better Van Damme movies I've seen, probably in the top 10.
After top viewing 10 it, Van Damme movies.
I'm probably going to watch
That's
it again.
Not the biggest praise.
It's really not.
It enters the Hall of Fame with Time Cop, Street Fighter.
I could name like 9 other Van Damme movies that are better than it, but still a top film nonetheless.
Oh man!
Very good. Very very entertaining.
Just love The Quest.
I love The Quest. I hated The Quest the first time I watched it. I love The Quest the second time I watched it.
We have sung the praises of The Quest many a time on this podcast before.
Is he telling a story? Is he reading a book? You don't fucking know. And there was it's like the same exact story as The Quest. There's like all these themed street fighters. One's like a Scotsman who wrestles. he fights in a kilt. A kilt. Fuck. In a kilt. My brain's not working. So it is entertaining.
Man, that's that sounds.
Can I tell you about the opening scene, which is probably going to make a lot of people watch it.
Sure, yes, please.
The guy is just on his knees, you know, just sniffing coke, and he's like, "This isn't coke. This is just sugar." And the guy goes, "Yeah, it is." And he pours gasoline on him and then sets him on fire. No background, no context.
Amazing.
Check out Lionheart.
Is that available streaming on that?
That is available streaming from the gods themselves.
Brilliant. All right. Anything else you've been consuming, Tyler?
No, that's it.
Okay. Dan, what about you? What have you been watching this week?
On Friday, I went to a double feature of Citizen Kane and the Magnificent Ambersons, which was really fun. Okay. I'd seen Citizen Kane a billion times. I'd only seen Ambersons, I think, once years ago. So it was a treat to see him on the big screen.
So I recognize the name, the Magnificent Ambersons, but you're gonna have to refresh my memory on that one.
That was Orson Welles' second feature, I believe, that kind of famously is like broken. I might get some of these details wrong for the super fans, but the general gist of it was basically after Citizen Kane, he went and made this movie and then went down to South America to make something else, during which the studio just took it over and cut about an hour of it out. And then he was taken out of the process, and then they kind of they lost the original negatives or something like that. So basically all those scenes are gone forever.
Oh, wow.
So it's like famously flawed, and like famously you'll never be able to see like his true vision of it, but was nominated for a bunch of Oscars at the time and is generally considered one of the better movies ever made.
Wow, are you serious?
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, from my taste, like when I was watching it, you could very much feel that it had been fucked with.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I look, Citizen Kane's like one of my all-time favorite movies. Like, I feel like that movie's just so advanced for its time and just so entertaining. Like, Emerson's didn't do it for me on that same level, but it's more kind of, I guess, historically interesting. And then a lot of the scenes and individual, like, shot composition is amazing. I mean, and he was so far ahead of his time and better than everybody else. It was insane.
Mm-hmm.
So I love him. So,
yeah. Cool. Had you seen Citizen Kane on the big screen before?
I think I have. I'm 90%, because I was thinking about that actually when I was sitting there. I was like, I feel like I've done this before, but I don't remember actually seeing it specifically. I feel like I saw it in New York sometime, but no, I've seen it a billion times. So,
So is Rosebud the sled? Is that the big secret?
Well, so I guess you know that from like a Simpsons episode or something.
Probably.
Well, spoiler alert.
For those of you, I don't say anything serious, Dan, so don't worry about me.
Oh, it's good. No, I just, you know, fans, spoilers, alerts, just throw them out there.
So yeah. For Magnificent Ambersons, is that one that, because you're saying how like kind of acclaimed it is, even though it was still torn up, I mean, would you still recommend people seeing it?
Yeah, especially, look, if you're a fan of Orson Welles, you have to see it in a lot of ways. You know, it's such an important part of his history. It's almost more interesting in the context of what happened to it. But it's a really great film, some really amazing performance. I mean, it's like, it's got mostly the same cast as Citizen Kane. It's his Mercury Theater, which was all awesome people. I can't get enough Joseph Cotten. I just can't get enough of him. So, yeah. You know, I'll watch that guy do anything.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, I'm happy to kind of like see that team back doing cool stuff anywhere.
Cool, cool, cool. Good stuff. Anything else you've been consuming this week, Dan?
I got into Game of Thrones, but I know you guys talked about that last week.
Oh, snap.
Is this geeky? I've been getting back into Magic the Gathering.
Okay. All right. How is that possible? You have to have other people with you.
That's geekier than Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah, because I could never have anybody be with me physically. I actually am afraid of that. Just like, it's again, a Ninja Turtles thing. I'm kind of Krang.
Yeah.
without the, like, that apparatus that lets me kind of drive them.
Right, just the brain.
The giant guy who looks like Hulk Hogan.
Oh, right. Yeah, he's, like, in the body. Yeah, right.
Yeah, hey. He sits in the body.
Yeah, he drives a body around. I forgot about that.
I didn't mean that you couldn't have anybody around you. I mean, for something so geeky, you would have to pull people down into your depth of geekdom to play Magic the Gathering. And I just feel like that's
unless you're on Xbox Live.
Oh, okay.
Playing cards.
Yeah,
and
that's
stuff
what
like
I was.
That.
Well, I mean, if you guys are familiar with the Xbox game or not, it's literally just the card game. Like you're given cards, but it like calculates everything for you and kind of just speeds everything along and kind of like if you haven't picked up the game in a while, kind of like reintroduces you back into it. I don't need to oversell it. I just I've been kind of getting
into it,
and I kind of like it. So.
Cool. Yeah. No. I mean, I've never played Magic the Gathering, so I can't really speak to the to that on a personal level. But
the artwork, some of the artwork is phenomenal.
Cool. Yeah, I'm sure.
I've always wanted to do a live Dungeons & Dragons game on a podcast. I think that'd be really sweet, like that community episode.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, that was a great one. I guess I got two things I want to mention really quickly. One is Midnight in Paris that I saw this week. Has anybody, you guys seen this movie?
I badly want to. I've been able to stay reasonably spoiler-free on it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, what do you know about it, Dan?
Honestly, I know it's Woody Allen. I know it's Owen Wilson. I know that it involves some sort of mystical element to
yes.
it.
Yeah.
And I know that I am obsessed with Paris personally. So I don't know why I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
That said.
All right. Yeah. You know what? I'm not even going to really talk about it then. I'm just going to say that I found it as kind of charming as everybody else in the critical community has. And because I went into it knowing nothing. I knew that Owen Wilson and Rachel McAdams were in it, and Woody Allen wrote and directed it, and that's it. That's all I knew. I knew nothing about it.
Effectively as much as I know, yeah.
Yeah. So I was, like, really surprised at it. I didn't know, like, what kind of characters they were or anything. So I'll allow you the same courtesy of going into it the same way that I did. So I would just recommend if this is one of those weird movies where if you like Woody Allen movies, you'll probably like it. But also if you traditionally are not a fan of Woody Allen, it kind of makes fun of people who like Woody Allen movies and Woody Allen himself to some degree. So it's kind of an interesting look at both sides of that coin at the same time, if that's even possible. But so I would recommend checking it out. I think it's got a lot of heart to it, and it's probably worth seeing. I don't know about theatrically for people who aren't like diehards. Like if you haven't, I don't know. I mean, for people like Dan who want to see it and haven't, but just haven't gotten around to it, then yeah, go see it in the theater. But otherwise, if it just like sounds vaguely interesting to you, then wait until DVD, because it's not like one of those movies that begs to be seen on the big screen. But it is probably worth seeing. So that's all I'll say about that for now. Maybe we'll talk about it, you know, on a later episode if Tyler, you get a chance to see it or something like that. But
not gonna happen.
Fair enough.
You have an anti Woody Allen thing going?
No, I was just kidding. I'll probably go see it. again, nothing serious from this side.
Okay, good. Duly noted.
The other one that I wanted to mention, I saw for the first time in probably, I don't know, a solid 5 or 6 years, and that is Swingers. John Favreau.
Nice.
What was his name? Doug Liman was the one who directed this. I always kind of, you know, get that mixed up since Favreau, you know, stars in it and wrote the movie. I always kind of attribute that to him as a director, but Doug Liman was actually the one who directed this. But it's a 1996 movie. It's available on Netflix streaming right now, so that's why I watched it, because I just hadn't seen it in a long time. Dan, I know, I mean, as a director, does this movie, or a director currently, you're living in Los Angeles, correct? Yes?
Don't reveal your location.
I am in Los Angeles.
Okay, so as a director, you know, somebody in the industry living in Los Angeles, does this movie have any sort of kind of special place in your heart?
I think it has a special place in most people's hearts who've seen it. Yeah, I mean, especially I moved out here in mid 2009, and like when we got here, we like made it our business to sit down and like watch Swingers, and it definitely has a kind of different. A different feel when you kind of are living it and you know people who are kind of going through the struggles and stuff there's nothing worse than being an actor. There's just nothing worse than it. Like, you have no control over your life and you're going out at all these auditions. And,
yeah.
Anyway, I couldn't be happier to not be an actor. Especially right. When you see that movie, you're like, oh, it's actually worse than that in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole like Ron Livingston's
yeah,
character, like,
that's what I was thinking.
You know, auditioning for the role of Goofy and not getting it and stuff like that. So yeah, you know, this is the first time I've seen this movie since moving to Los Angeles, and there's a lot of, it's just one of those cool LA movies, you know, like there's a lot of, I mean, Vegas is a decent portion of the film and stuff, but I've just been, I think I'm trying to make it a mission of mine to go through and kind of rewatch all these like classic, you know, classically set LA movies, like traditional Los Angeles movies, now that I'm actually out here and can kind of familiarize myself a little bit with the area and stuff like that. So, that being said, even if you don't live in Los Angeles, obviously Swingers is still funny. Vince Vaughn is fantastic in this movie, and Favreau was actually really great too. So, this is one of those things that you can easily see how it can launch people's careers because they're so great in it. And it's just like a personal movie, you know, like you really do feel like this is stuff that happens to real people. Nothing that happens in it is too outrageous. Like there's one point when these guys are wandering around outside of a bar and they kind of like bump into one guy and like they get into this like almost brawl. And then one of their guys pulls out a gun. One of their friends pulls out a gun. And like, it seems to me that like everybody, you know, I think they make a point in the movie to say something about like, everybody's got a Los Angeles gun story. So there's, you know, there's things like that, that are kind of like analogous to real life in some degree. And the entire movie itself just feels very genuine. So it's really funny. If you guys haven't seen it, again, it's streaming right now. So Swingers is the movie. It's definitely worth checking out. All right, so let's go ahead and move on into our review of The Big Lebowski.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. You know, that or his dudeness or duder or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
Ah! Employed?
You like sex, Mr. Lebowski.
Is this your only ID?
You got the wrong guy. I'm the dude.
Your name's Lebowski, Lebowski.
Jeff Lebowski, the other Lebowski, the millionaire.
I received this ransom note this morning.
This is the bummer, man.
They want you to take the money and act as courier.
What do you mean, man?
What the hell is this?
My dirty undies, dude. The whites.
Let's take that hell!
Why should we settle for 20 grand when we can keep the entire million?
I know you're mixed up in all this.
Playing one side against the other in bed with everybody.
Blow them.
Huh?
Fabulous stuff.
What?
Who's sitting on $1 million?
We want the money.
Ah! Sitting in the trunk of our car.
Where's my damn money?
Say, dude, where is your car?
Who's got your undies, Walter?
All right, so The Big Lebowski is a 1998 film written and directed by Joel and Ethan Coen, starring Jeff Bridges and a crap ton of other people, including Sam Elliott as the Stranger, which I love. Yeah. This is like one of my favorite Sam Elliott performances. Let's go around the circle real quick and just do kind of introductory thoughts. What did you guys think of The Big Lebowski? Tyler, let's go with you. Had you seen this before?
Not completely.
Okay.
And there was a lot of hype behind it. Like, people just absolutely love this movie. So I was going in with like, okay, all right. That was kind of the same thing with Pulp Fiction last week. I was like, okay, lots of hype. Let's see if it lives up to it. And it did, I think. Maybe a couple more viewings, I'll be convinced.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I really liked the dialogue. I really liked the situations that the dude got into, and it was just a good, enjoyable 2 hours of my time. I wouldn't, regret anything. I don't regret anything, and I recommend it to everybody.
Good stuff. All right, Dan, I know this is one of your favorite films, so why don't you tell us why?
Yeah, it definitely is, and it actually I've seen it so many times that I'm not really qualified to like review it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's one of the few movies that just kind of like became a part of me. Mm-hmm. And that I like kind of subconsciously quote beyond, you know, anything that I'm even aware of. Here's the thing about it. I do have to say, most people who really love it don't really like get it and deeply fall in love with it until like viewing four for yes. some reason is yes. somewhere around when you're like, it just like clicks in and you're like, everything about this is working. In particular for me, it's the, like the line deliveries. And that being, you know, the script to the performances to which takes they chose, is so infectious, and perfect and quotable, more so than for me almost any other movie, among many other things that I love about it. But those are my introductory thoughts.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you in that I like this movie a lot. I also did not really get into it until I think it was my third viewing of it. And I just kind of exactly what you explained is what happened to me, where I was just like, man, this is really awesome. And like, because the movie itself on first viewing, and Tyler, I'm sure you can speak to this, is like confusing as hell. Like, you don't really know exactly what's going on. And that's because the movie is kind of based on The Big Sleep, which is Raymond Chandler's novel. It's been turned into, I think, a couple different adaptations, the most famous of which starring Humphrey Bogart, which is also one of my favorite movies. And this is just kind of like, it's similar to the way that the Coens adapted the story of the Odyssey in O Brother, Where Art Thou? They kind of did the same thing with The Big Sleep here with The Big Lebowski. So it's like purposefully confusing and really like labyrinthine, you know, like all the there's, as the dude says a bunch of different times, like, there's so many, you know, it's complex, you know, there's so many different things going on. A lot of
ins, a lot of outs.
Yeah.
A lot of what have yous.
Yeah. So, like, it's really difficult if you're watching the movie on the first time and trying to follow all these different plot lines and figure out what's going on. I think it's only until the third viewing, or it was for me anyway, when I just kind of stopped trying to follow every plot line to its conclusion and just like sat back and let the movie kind of wash over you. And as a, I don't know, as an experience, I think it's maybe a lot more effective than as a narrative. I don't know. That might be like blasphemous to Dan and some like hardcore fans of this movie, but I think the movie actually works a little bit better as a collection of scenes than it does as a real movie per se.
No way, man. I got it the first time.
Did you?
I let it wash over me like I do with all movies. I didn't judge it before I put it in the old VHS player, whatever we're calling it nowadays. Man, it's all about, it's got so many messages behind it. Can I say this right now? Can I say who I think the stranger is?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
It's God. It's God.
Am I right? Elaborate. Why don't you elaborate?
The stranger is not only the narrator, but he's also God. He oversees everything, and he knows the dude in and out. He knows everybody in and out. And then just the things that he says is very omnipotent, which allows my definition. If you're omnipotent, you know all, i.e., some sort of deity.
I'm glad that that's your definition, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of funny. There are kind of some religious undertones because Walter is, you know, he practices Judaism. Like, he doesn't bowl on the Jewish Sabbath.
Right.
And just stuff like that. Like, and how the dude is a pacifist. Like, that's kind of his religion. And just the whole, like the presence of bowling as like this thing that holds everything together, kind of makes sense. Like a beginning and an end, like life and death, like the ends of a bowling lane.
Right. Man, you're going deep into this.
To extrapolate on that, I guess, I mean, like, I do think that in a lot of ways, like, the whole movie is summed up by them saying, fuck it, dude, let's go bowling.
Yeah.
Kind of a philosophical level.
It's kind of their answer to everything.
Well, yeah, and there is a lot of...
Kind of like a religion.
Yeah, and there's a lot of philosophy, too. You know, they run into the nihilists and stuff, and, like, that right. turns into a big thing. And, like, that whole... Like, one of my favorite lines in the movie is when he's, like... when Walter's talking about how... he's like, say what you will about the tenets of National Socialism, right? Or is that what...
Say what you will about the tenets of National Socialism, dude. At least it's an ethos.
Yeah, at least it's an ethos. So, yeah, I mean, there's a ton of stuff going on. I'm not trying to imply that the movie's not, symbolic and deep on any sort of level. I just think as a straightforward narrative, like, the stuff that actually happened, you know, it gets so unnecessarily complex. But again, that's kind of mirroring the structure of The Big Sleep, because, you know, when The Big Sleep came out, like, the freaking writer, Raymond Chandler, and a couple other people, I think there was another guy, and forgive me for not knowing this off the top of my head, but somebody else helped write the screenplay for the Bogart version of The Big Sleep, and somebody asked them, like, a year afterwards or something, what actually happened to this one character, because it was never, like, wrapped up in the movie. And they're like, oh, yeah, I don't know. We just completely forgot about him. Like, there's so much stuff going on in it that they just couldn't – even the writers of the movie couldn't wrap up their own story. And I feel like there's a lot of stuff like that in The Big Lebowski where, you know, like, Walter is so confident that Bunny is not actually kidnapped or in danger. And there's that whole toe scene, which is really ridiculous.
Which totally – How does it not make sense, though?
No, it does, but I just mean it gets – there's so many different things that go on into it, and, like, you're not 100% clear of what's going on until, you know, like, each thing is, like, slowly kind of revealed as the movie goes on, but still, like, the entire I guess the whole driving force of the movie never really became that clear to me at the end. Like, by the time that Bunny returns from Palm Springs at the end, and you realize that she just kind of took off, and it's like, where did all this other stuff come from? Like, there had to be a domino effect that came from all of it, and I don't know. I mean, this is the first time I've seen the movie in a long time, so maybe I just missed something early on in the movie, but I don't know. I choose to believe.
I do agree that the maybe like the le- like the that element of the plot, the kind of like pieces of the mystery kind of coming together is not necessarily like what makes everybody love that movie, I think.
Right.
Although I do think that like it you can track it if you try to, and they do explain it, I think, relatively well.
All right. Well, yeah, maybe I just missed something this time around. I didn't know if there was something that if you guys had noticed that and just kind of like chose to kind of buy into it, you know? But yeah, no, I mean, I'm just pointing out
the toe.
What's that, Tyler?
Well, yeah, what's your confusion about the toe?
No, the toe I was just using as an example. Like, they obviously...
Do you need a toe? Because I can get you a toe. I can get you a toe by 3 o'clock.
No, they figured that out, I just was trying to point out that there's a lot of stuff that, I don't know. I don't really know what
else. Do you know where the toe came from?
Yes. I mean, it showed one of the girls in the diner, where it kind of...
played by Amy Mann, by the way.
Okay.
Of course.
Interesting.
Personal friend of Dan, I think.
No, I wish.
Ectoplasm, personal friend.
All
right, yeah, no, I wanted to kind of just point out that on this viewing, I didn't find things as clear as maybe I had in the past. But that's not to say that I don't like this movie, because I really do. I think there's a ton of awesome moments in it. Tyler, what were some of the parts that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, a lot of just the dude's dialogue, like what he was saying. He would get mixed up in this stuff, and like Walter would just take charge, but he didn't, like, the dude was kind of along for the ride, and he chose to do that. Like, he never really took charge. He was just kind of like, okay, I need to be here. I listen. Like, he never answers the phone, just kind of stuff like this. He lets things happen to him. And then Walter, his dialogue was just curse ridden, and I really, really dug that. But just the ridiculousness, like, I welcome the complex and the ridiculous in my movies, so I guess that's why maybe I enjoyed it the first time right away, and we'll probably and definitely watch it again. So like the acid trips he goes on, or the flashbacks to his acid trips, those were just, yeah, I mean, those were weird, but that's what acid, I assume, can do to you.
Yes.
I can't really pinpoint a specific part in the movie that, you know, like just the movie as a whole. It sounds like I didn't watch the movie, but I did.
Dan, you can elaborate now that we're into like more of a little bit of a meaty discussion for it. You know, you're just talking about like this being one of your favorite films, and you know, you kind of went over some little introductory things, but care to elaborate on any particular point?
I think it's because I think, you know, like we're getting kind of caught up in the discussion about like the plot and its complexities and stuff, and I really think that it especially if you look at it in the context of like other Coen Brothers movies, it really is a character study first.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like wrapped in the wrappings of this kind of mystery, and it's about this character who should not be involved in a mystery kind of like falling into it and kind of, you know, adding it up in his kind of, you know, pot rattled brain, which I don't know. It's like, it's so for me, all the things that I really like about it are all these like little kind of character quirks, and just little things that kind of fill out the world that they live in, this kind of like ridiculous, weird kind of 1990 LA.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know, there's just, like, cool little things in it, like, that you start to pick up on, you know, further viewings. Like his character in particular, like picks up a lot of his dialogue from other characters in the movie.
Yep.
Like, you know, like, he'll overhear, like, that speech from George H.W. Bush, and then later on he's like, you know, this aggression will not stand, man.
Yeah.
And, like, he just picks up stuff like in his dream sequence, like the scissors that the nihilists are using are paintings that are in Julianne Moore's studio, and like it's just kind of interesting how like he just keeps kind of getting like subtly influenced and just kind of like taking people's terms and kind of like sometimes using them incorrectly. Like,
yeah,
when he's like, you know, in the parlance of our times, it's right. Like that wasn't used right. Like, He's just, I don't know, he's a fascinating guy to kind of, like, watch. And then just, like, all the little elements of, like, how it, like, he's got it working. Like his landlord being so, like, timid to ask him for the rent. But it's, like, he clearly keeps him around because, like, the dude is willing to, like, go, like, watch his dance quintet. And,
right.
Like, I don't know, just like all these little weird elements of the world are so fun and interesting to me. Like John Turturro is such a kook. And I mean, it's populated by so many like insane people.
Yeah.
Who are like, I don't know, just these like phenomenally like both simultaneously kind of like really large performances, yet there's something just like really authentic in it. I think one of my favorite characters is Knox Harrington, the video artist, like that just super creep with the high pitched voice who's like in her studio and he's like, it's a Sandra about the Biennale, and he's just being so weird, and you're like, there's just something authentic about it that you can't put your finger on. You're just like, I don't know, it feels right, yet it's so, so weird.
Now, is each character supposed to represent, like, an aspect of humanity where the dude is, like, not the realist, but kind of the guy that watches things happen, maybe does get involved, and then Walter's the aggressive, and then Buscemi's character is, like, the, not the incompetent, but just the unaware.
Innocent. He's definitely innocent.
But he never knows what's going on. Like this, all this stuff is going on, but all he knows is like he can bowl. And then when he realizes that he doesn't strike every time or whatever, that's when his life comes to an end. And it's just
comes
to an end. And
the not getting the strike thing is probably more like metaphorical or whatever. I don't think that he doesn't get the strike and then goes, whoop, gotta have a heart attack now.
Right.
I think I think it's a sign though for
it's
him.
It's a sign. That's what I mean. It's like this like weird omen.
Yeah. I agree, Dan. Like it is a character movie, and I think like each character is something in this world. Just like, you know, we have certain terms that describe these abstract human qualities, and I really like character based tales because you do get kind of a better experience when you experience not just for storyline, you know, there's a beginning and an end, you know, it's more the experience of what's going on while you're walking this path through
sure. A
film or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, just for the record, I'm right there with you guys, and I love all the characters, and the dude is like, actually, every single character in this movie is massively interesting. Like, even Brandt, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He's amazing!
Like, ridiculously over the top, like, you know, you could practically just see him, like, clicking his fingers together and, like, running around to every, you know, and following the Big Lebowski's beck and call. But he's, like, just something about him, like Dan, you were saying. It's just, like, something about all of these characters. It's, like, every one of them is, like, almost iconic right from the go, you know? Like, there's not even... I feel like this movie, I didn't see it right when it first came out, but... and it's obviously developed, like, a huge cult following, but I feel like...
to talk about at some point.
Yeah. And I feel like this, like every one of these characters, like instantly, if I would have seen it in theaters, would have been, I mean, they're all so memorable. Like even if you only see this movie once, you're going to remember Walter. You're going to remember, you know, all of these guys. So that's like a really, you know, it's a testament to the script more than anything else, I think. It's like just the way that they're able to kind of populate this movie and this really weird world with like these totally insane characters. And have them just, like Dan, you were saying, it's like infectious, you know, you just kind of, you have to watch them. It's just like compulsively interesting.
You just want to hang out. Like I think, and I was struck by this when I was watching it again last night, which I probably watch it every couple of months. I've seen it so many times. It's really just not, it's become its own kind of just like Bible to me in its own weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Just the kind of thing I kind of keep going back to, and getting different things out of. So I'm like, kind of like, you know, four dream levels deep, if you will,
right.
With regards to but I had a point that I started at.
Oh no, he's too deep. We've lost
I'm too many dream levels deep. You guys, I'm stuck.
Will you mention
the cliff collapsing?
It was just Walter, I think, is definitely one of my all-time favorite characters. And when you think about it, it's like on the surface, he's you know, a pretty stereotypical character. He's the guy from Vietnam who, like, still thinks he's in Vietnam, which is, like, a pretty played-out thing. But it's so specific, and it's done with such a kind of, I don't know, flair of, I guess authenticity is the best way to put it, but there's just something about it where, like, out of John Goodman's mouth and just in his whole attitude, you just buy this guy, and you feel like you know that guy, or he's a part, or he's... I feel like both him and the dude are almost just kind of like aspects of a personality that are usually for people. But it's like, imagine if that was an entire person.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In the case of the dude, it's like the kind of, cause like both of them are like both really ineffectual yet extremely opinionated. Both kind of like fancy themselves really intellectuals, but aren't doing anything other than sitting around all day bowling and complaining about the war and stuff like that. Like, it reminds me of pretty much everybody I went to college with. Because, like, I remember going to college and, like, everyone's, like, super political and all that stuff. And then I was, like, sitting there going, like, wait, is anybody planning to do anything about any of these complaints? And it was like, no, we're going to get high.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah. All right.
But Walter was so sure of himself. And you kind of think that's kind of like a dick personality, but then he's right every time. Like every time, you know, he was right the entire time. So you can't. It's kind of like, well, you have to listen to Walter now because in the end,
I think that's one of my favorite things. Is it's like what, like I like they, and also like they so rarely listen to each other, like in the conversations. You know, like so many of the characters will like say something, and then clearly the other guy like just wasn't listening or not paying attention fully.
Yeah.
But like it's funny, like. The last time Walter really listens to anything is when the dude is like, hey, you know, she kidnapped herself. Like, and you watch him, you watch it just, like, internalize for him, and then he's like, well, that's what happened. Done.
Yeah.
You said it yourself, dude. Like,
yeah.
I love that, like, determination, and I love that that's just correct. Like, he's just, he's has no good reason to believe it, but it is true.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
That's what goes on with, like, you know, it's like they throw the ringer out, but it's for a ringer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's to keep happening where it's like they try to have like the kind of weird take on it, but it turns out to be what's actually going down.
I think that's what I was trying to describe earlier when I was pointing out the toe thing, like that Walter is so sure of himself that this is right, even though he has no basis for that opinion other than just the fact that the dude said it in one of his random like spoutings of possibilities, and he just latches on to that one.
You said it yourself. You kidnapped yourself.
Well, and also Walter's like so convinced that like he's a part of this whole thing. He's like, oh, yeah. They send us a toe, and we're supposed to freak out. What the fuck us, man?
Yeah, and he's like in the back of our car, and he's like, our car? What are you talking about?
Royalty.
I keep laughing at the part where he throws out the ringer and then he goes, okay, I'm gonna tumble out of the car and go after these guys and beat it out of them, and they speed off on motorcycles.
I think why it's so quotable for me is like weirdly so many of the quotes are like you can recontextualize them like in life, like I feel like I'm quoting that movie on set all the time by like, not even literally quoting, I'm just saying a line from it that contextually is accurate in the moment, you know? Like, I think one of the ones I use all the time is like, no, that fucks with our plan. like, that's not, yeah, that isn't good. Because like, you know, I love that moment. He's like, he's got his one plan. And like it's like not going to work. And he's like, no, we can't do that. Then my plan doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Walter, really? You got a good plan?
Walter, this isn't a First Amendment thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish my coffee.
Oh, I say that all the time. I'm always, I mean, like, I'm just like, finishing my coffee.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
I have to get myself checked.
You know, when I was talking earlier about the story and stuff, there's a lot of places that this movie goes that I really appreciate, even if I don't fully like grasp all of it all the time. But, like one of my favorite aspects of this movie, is how like the dude ends up in this police station in Malibu. And, everybody has this kind of perception of Malibu as being like this kind of whatever, super breezy, like ideal like paradise, and the police chief there like freaking throws a coffee cup at his forehead, like a mug at his forehead, and is like kicks him over and it's like brutally vicious toward him, and you know he's just like he's so like dead serious about keeping the dude out of his kind of idyllic community. I don't know. Something about that just struck me as really funny. Like the way that, you know, it kind of, goes against our perceptions of what people think Malibu is.
I love the way that the dude deals with him. It's like, he just kind of reverts back to kind of his days of like, you know, being in protests and being like, he's like, and a real reactionary type. Like, he's just...
Yeah.
He's dealt with these kind of, like, stuffed shirts before or whatever.
Yeah.
Fascist.
Exactly. Yeah, he just screams, calls him a fascist. But he chucks a fucking mug at his head. It's so, like, such a violent act.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even, like, throw it. He, like, pushes it toward him really hard. Like, the way he throws it was kind of dumb, too.
That guy, I mean, like, that's what I mean. Is, like, the whole thing's so quotable. Like, that guy's an amazing character. He's got that whole little speech about, like, I'm going to probably fuck it up, but it's like, you know, like, I don't like a jerk-off name. I don't like a jerk-off face. I don't like
jerk-off.
Like, that's brilliant. I'm sorry. You know, it's like, at least, very least, ultra-quotable.
Right, right, right. Tyler, what did you think about that scene when Walter and the dude go to Larry's house to get to confront him about the homework? Had you seen that part before?
No, I was waiting. It was funny because I did think the kid had the money, and then this stupid, smarmy douche teenager comes out, and I'm just like, you know what? Destroying that car is justified because this kid is just an a-hole. And I didn't get why the writer from Brandon, whatever show they were talking about, was in like an iron lung in the living room, and he's like yelling at them. He's like, oh, since the beginning, we've been real fans of yours. And then, like,
killing your father, mentioned. Larry. Yeah.
And then, and it's just another scene where the dude's car is getting slowly destroyed over the course of this film.
Yeah.
And I mean, I agree with you, Ben. It is kind of a bunch of adventures put together that all kind of are connected.
I think that scene in particular ripens on further viewings because when you're not trying to figure out, like, where it's going to go and how they're going to get the money back and all that stuff, you can just kick back and enjoy Walter's weird, like, reverence for Brandon and, like, just this fucking look on that kid's face. And, like, the fact that, like again, Walter, he gets one idea in his head and then just can't deviate from it. And he's like, all right, so we're going to go in. We're going to confront him with the evidence. We're going to be like, is this your homework, Larry? He's going to answer. And then, and the one thing he didn't, like, plan for was the idea the kid's not going to answer. He just can't handle it. Just can't fucking handle it.
Yeah, so he has to get out that aggression somehow. But yeah, I mean, I think that's probably, like, if there was a scene right before that when it showed them talking about what they were going to do, I think he probably would have said something like, okay, we're going to physically ask him this question and wait for his response, because Walter asks him, is this your homework, Larry, like 9 or 10 times or something. And the dude, like, Larry, you know, obviously remains silent the whole time. And the dude is the one who's really kind of like bouncing back and forth off of him in this conversation. And he's like, we know it's his homework, man. Let's find the money. Like, stop with your stupid plan. And like, let's get to the point of what's going on here. But yeah, I think maybe just because this movie has so many different scenes that are kind of iconic, you know, like you've got the bowling alley, the whole like you don't mess with the Jesus thing, and like there's, you know, the car thing with Walter, and like there's so many different things that are kind of standouts within the context of the movie itself. I think that's why maybe I consider it more of like a pastiche of scenes as opposed to like a connected thing. I mean, I think probably, Dan, you're right. If, you know, and I would assume, considering you've seen this way more than Tyler or I ever have, but that if you were trying to draw a line between all these different story points, you could eventually figure out exactly what was going on. But I mean, there's one thing that I wanted to mention too, is there's a scene where Donnie dies and they get his ashes in that coffee can, and they're like, they're talking to the guy at the mortuary, which is like an awesome scene. And eventually they, you know, they get the ashes in the coffee can, and that right there is like such a you know, that was in Due Date this past year. It was in the Zach Galifianakis Robert Downey Jr. movie, like the whole ashes in the coffee can thing. I feel like that's been used a bunch of times since the Big Lebowski, like to a point where that's almost a cliche at this point. So,
but it's a message about how we treat death, I think, as well. Like,
well, yeah,
it
cost
so much money. The guy was like, they're up to $3,000, and like, you still, like, you die. This poor guy dies, and you know, $3,000 gets you an urn to carry his ashes in. Like, they can't, you can't like give us the ashes and anything else. We have to pay you something,
right?
Yeah, another quote from that scene, though, that I feel like is the kind of thing that kind of comes up in life a lot, is the, at least in, on a kind of feelings level, is like when he's like, just because we're bereaved doesn't make us saps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you feel that way sometimes, like where you're like, hey, don't fucking just take advantage of me just because I'm sad right now, you fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Can't we just rent it from you? We're not a rental service.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that guy's performance is amazing.
We're going to spread the ashes anyway.
Yeah, one that I quote unknowingly is there a Ralph's around here?
Okay.
What was all that shit about Vietnam?
Yeah, in the whole eulogy that Walter delivers, yeah. He's like, that Vietnam has nothing to do with any of this. Yeah.
Dude.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of just wanted to get a lot of your thoughts on the movie, because this is really cool talking to somebody who's seen it once and then somebody who's seen it, you know, countless times. So I don't really have that much more to say. But if any of you have anything that you guys wanted to bring up that we didn't cover, then that'd be great.
So we're all in agreement. Nope.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Are we all in agreement that Sam Elliott is God in this movie? Because I want to take that away. I want to take that away as my thought.
I mean, I'll give you that.
I'll let you think that.
Yeah, I think there's enough there to support that.
That's
as
enough.
A possible reading. So,
enough for me.
I'll give you he's definitely omniscient.
Yeah. And, you know, he's the narrator, so he's the one who's telling the story anyway. So of course, he knows.
But isn't God the narrator of life, dude?
that's what I mean. On a very kind of base level, you could compare him to God.
What were you going to say, Dan?
No, I was just going to say, like, with regards to the kind of plot versus character elements of it, like, mm-hmm. I think, especially if you look at some of, like, their later movies, like, I think A Serious Man is probably the best example, they don't typically care so much about the plot, necessarily, outside of what it's kind of doing thematically. You know?
Yeah.
And so I feel like this was at a point in their career where they couldn't have made a movie that just kind of was a character study and just kind of like events in this kind of weird person's life that add up to something, even
right.
though not necessarily like, it, like, I feel like, A Serious Man is kind of almost more like a novel or an essay almost, than a typical like story. That's one of the things I kind of love about it, and I remember like when I was in film school, they were like teaching us all these like screenwriting rules, and I remember the first day the teacher was like, and just so you know, all right, the Coen brothers break every one of these rules, and it always works, so don't ever use them as defense for your bullshit script.
Gotcha.
So you know, they're like, I feel like you, in order to kind of really get into their stuff, you kind of have to. Leave some of your just film watching baggage at the door, mm-hmm. and just get into them.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was just that, like, that the movie has taken on such a cult status. Like,
yeah.
So
that was the
far
thing.
Beyond the Coen brothers that it's become this just kind of like iconic pot comedy, and like very much like, I think has like a fan base that. It does not necessarily love every other Coen Brothers movie per se.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, I'm like an obsessed Coen fan. So I like, that's kind of where I'm at with it. But it's interesting to me that like, this is the one movie of theirs that seems to have like completely crossed over into like just super fandom.
Yeah. And they've got like the whole Lebowski festival mm-hmm. thing, right? Like that's a real thing that happens. And like dudism is actually a real religion.
They opened a Lebowski store in Manhattan. I found out.
Okay. What do they sell? Just like stuff, like costumes and stuff.
Yeah. They sell like memorabilia from the movie. Like not like, you know, shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, people are obsessed with it. Like I saw like, you can get the knitting pattern for his sweater. Is online,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that.
Interesting fact: when Jeff Bridges, I think you guys will know this, Jeff Bridges was on Conan, and he said like when they were making the movie, a lot of those dude clothes came out of Bridges's like collection, his closet, because they were just like, yeah, just throw on whatever you have.
Yeah,
like they weren't costumes delegated to him by anybody. It was like he just brought in his clothes and wore whatever he had in his closet, and like the famous shoes. Like the, what I don't know what they are, like leather sandals or whatever he wears, came out of his closet and stuff like that. So
I love
that.
That's
pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a good kind of similar story was that DC Pearson, who was your guys' guest last week and co-wrote and starred in my movie Mystery Team, when we were shooting a scene in that movie that involved a homeless person, and the costume that like the costumer brought looked like a kind of like cartoon hobo almost, which wasn't working for a variety of reasons for DC. The guy had to actually look legit. And DC was like, hold on, let me go into my closet. And we got out clothes that looked like far more homeless than anything like
nice. You've ever
found. Yeah.
I always enjoy when...
What was it like the hobo clown where he's got like the stick and the handkerchief bag?
Well, that was the costume we had. The thing, it was for right. that scene. He's supposed to go up to an actual homeless person, and like what was brought on the day looked very similar to his Bindle hobo costume. So right. we were like, wait, no, that's not the joke.
Yeah.
The joke is that he goes up to a real homeless person.
Right.
No one feels bad for a comical hobo.
Well, it just kind of is like, wait, what world is this? Where they think that hobos are this way and then they just are?
He didn't hop on a train afterwards, did he?
Almost. It was a boxcar.
He grabbed a shotgun right after that. But...
I love hobos.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's basically that should cover it. So, do you guys want to just do some like concluding thoughts? Tyler, let's start with you.
Go see this movie, man. It'll rock your socks.
Okay. All right. That's about as succinct as they come, I guess. Dan.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you felt like you liked it but didn't necessarily love it on the first viewing, give it another chance, and maybe something else will bubble up to the surface for you.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, like I'm almost not qualified to do it because it's just such a part of me that I, you know, it's one of those movies that I can't really like see objectively anymore.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, I would agree. Definitely this one is more than any other movie I can think of is deserving of multiple viewings just because it's so strange. On the first viewing, and then it kind of you do, because there's so many of these iconic scenes that go all the way through it, you really do kind of take different things from it on each viewing. So I'm a fan of this movie. I definitely think it's worth seeing for anybody who's listening to this podcast. Although one thing that we didn't necessarily go into that much is that like the language of it is like, and Tyler, you mentioned it a little bit, but like this, I think it's ranked pretty high on that list of movies that drop the F-bomb, right? It's up there. You guys know what I'm talking about? This list.
Oh, is there a list?
The word fuck?
Yes. Yeah. No, but there's
a
word. Yeah, no, I'm just saying. There's sections of this movie that are just like completely vulgar in language, even though both of these, even though it totally works within the context of the characters that they've kind of came up with. So,
in fairness, though, I wouldn't. Okay, yeah, they use a lot of curse words, but I wouldn't really describe the language as vulgar. Like they're not really sitting there like describing disgusting things or even outwardly. Like they're using it all just kind of colloquially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not really for dirty purposes.
Right. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. You're right. Vulgar was a misnomer on my part.
Just part of their language. Just part of the language, man.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
They're all just words, dude.
That's
all right.
Right, man.
Well, Tyler, you want to go ahead and rev up the Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
Sure do.
All right.
Let's pull that comically large lever and choose that next movie. We'll be watching Wet Hot American Summer. Am I right there? Did I get those adjectives in the correct order?
You did, yes. This is a David...
All right, starring David Hyde Pierce, Janine Garofalo. Am I right?
Oh, it's the same starring movie? A lot more people than that. Come on.
Yeah, those are the two that popped into my mind just now.
yeah, I've
failed so at Doug Loves Movies.
I've never actually seen Wet Hot American Summer, so that should be interesting.
Oh, that will be interesting.
Looking forward to that.
I watched it on cable TV, if that counts.
Right. It doesn't.
Okay.
All right.
Damn it.
Unless it was on, I don't know, Secret Stash or something.
Yeah.
No, it was definitely on Comedy Central, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, no.
But enough
about
me. That's
a movie whose cast, like, exploded after it came out.
Yeah, I think like Bradley Cooper is in it in a small role.
Amy Poehler before she was on, I think before she was on SNL.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that one should be
and
cool.
David Hyde Pierce, who
Paul Rudd,
Frasier.
Yes, Niles and Frasier.
Elizabeth Banks.
Consider that an explosion.
All right, well, if you guys want to watch Wet Hot American Summer, it's actually on Netflix streaming right now. You can do that and send us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the movie or any of our previous episodes of this show. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes. Leave us a review. That would be awesome. You can check us out on Facebook and Twitter. We are on twitter.com/NJNMPodcast. So I've actually got a couple new followers here that I wanted to mention. At Daily Dead News, at James_Hawthorne, at The Dan Peck Show, and at Joni, what is that, FPG Spaith. So thanks for the follows there. Also got one email. Dear NJNM Podcast, I hate the fucking Eagles too. Signed, Rock and Roll. So thanks for the email.
Thank you, Rock and Roll.
Rock and Roll, yeah, exactly.
He knows what's up.
All right.
Or she.
Good stuff. Tyler, let's go ahead and then wrap up the character name game. So you want to remind us what the character was?
Oh, this is a good one. I don't know if you guys will get it. The character's name is Ricardo Bodie.
Ricardo Bodie. All right.
B-O-D-I.
And we have to keep in mind, Dan, that this has to have some sort of connection to a movie that came out in wide release this past weekend. So I think, if I'm not mistaken...
Sure,
what movies came out in wide releases?
I think it was just Cars 2 and Bad Teacher.
Some movie called 13 and Conan's movie.
Oh, yes, Conan O'Brien.
I don't know. I don't know movies.
Ricardo, man.
Ricardo Bodie. What the
you
fuck?
Have to name the movie this character appeared in. The movie.
Do we get any more hints?
I can delegate hints.
Let's do it because I've got nothing on this one.
What do you want, Ben?
I don't know. Maybe a genre or something.
Genre, comedy/crime.
What? Okay.
Crime.
Maybe a year?
2008.
Okay, so it's recent. I don't know, Rock and Rolla?
Incorrect.
Comedy/crime.
Wanka.
I have no fucking idea. Yeah, the movie came out in 2008?
Maybe a director, Tyler?
Director. Charles Robert Karner.
I don't think...
Also helped write the screenplay.
I don't think I've ever heard of that person before in my life.
Twice.
Who's the main... Who's the lead actor in this movie? If we're going all the way down the list.
Wow, okay.
Okay. I believe his friends call him Larry the Cable Guy.
Oh, that's an interesting choice, you know.
I know.
Why would any of us know that?
I think the one you're looking for, is that movie with Larry the Cable Guy and, like, Jenny McCarthy or something, and it's, like, god-awful.
I think I know what it's called.
Go for it, Dan. What is it?
Witless Protection?
There.
That is correct, yes. No. All right, some interesting history behind Ricardo Bodie, though. He was way down the list, but he's played by Yaphet Kotto. Who you
How
may
the
recall.
Fuck is anyone supposed to know that?
Wait for it. He was probably best known for playing Mr. Big in the James Bond thriller Live and Let Die. So, I didn't think that was too obscure since he was in a...
What? You're out of your mind. Didn't think that was too obscure?
It gets hard every week, dude.
I would find it hard... Okay. Find me 10 people who are fans of Witless Protection.
I get 6 degrees of separation from the film that came out this weekend.
What I'm saying, though, is like, let's just say you take a random sampling of people who are hardcore fans of Witless Protection.
Right.
I don't believe any of them are going to know who the fuck that character is.
His name's too long because the other characters' names are Sheriff Smoot, Elmer, Bo, Gus, and Tater.
Oh,
and, of course, Jenny McCarthy plays Connie.
All right, so basically...
Is Larry played Tater? Like he played Mater?
Oh, Larry plays Deputy Larry Stalder. Because he's like Tony Danza, where he can't be called anything else because he won't respond to it.
Right, they have to call him Larry or Tony. Or...
Yeah.
Right. So the connection, of course, being that Larry the Cable Guy stars in Cars 2, which came out this most recent weekend, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yes. Okay.
Yeah, that was...
That one in the holster for a long time, waiting for him to come out with a movie.
Yeah, Tyler, I think we're going to have to institute some rule where it has to be, like, the same character in the movie or something, because this is getting to a clearly unguessable...
Yeah, it has to be playable, the game.
Hey, just bone up on your movies, guys. That's all I got to say.
Okay, yeah. All right.
You really missed 2008 if you didn't see Witless Protection.
Right.
Did you see Witless Protection?
Me personally?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
You were like, okay, only an asshole is going to get this one.
That's Tyler for you.
Much.
All right. Well,
let's
go around the circle and just tell everybody where they can find more of our work online this week. Dan Ekman, let's start with you. Where can people track you down?
More of my work. You can get my movie Mystery Team is streaming on Netflix and is available in all other ways on DVD and stuff. I have another movie called Worst Prom Ever that I think is available on iTunes still, so or I think on Amazon, or if you check out MTV, they replay it from time to time. And I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/Dan Ekman, but that's not any work or anything of interest.
Right. All right. Tyler, how about you?
Well, Destageddon, The Solar Sentinel, and I did a pretty awesome interview this week, which I think you can find in the Not Just New Movies feed. Am I correct, Ben?
Yeah, I'm going to put it up right after we post this episode.
So I'll probably introduce that clip, and then you guys can listen to that. So check it out.
Cool. All right, you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing sporadically at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast, and you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. Music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com, and they're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out there. Special thanks to Dan Ekman for donating some of your time and coming by and hanging out with us, talking to Big Lebowski today. We really appreciate it, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was really fun.
Yeah, definitely. And then, like we said, we're watching Wet Hot American Summer next week, so you guys can follow along, watch along with us, and shoot us an email or leave us a voicemail. Let us know what you think. Special thanks to my co-host, Tyler, for sticking around.
Yeah, you can talk to me on Twitter too if you want at @NotNJNMPodcast.
Yeah, you were giving me crap last week about not thanking you, even though you're my co-host.
I can never get enough of that. Thank you.
Right? Yeah, no problem. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We'll catch y'all next week. I've got the blues. I've got the blues.